This episode of the OrthoBullets podcast will go over the topic of meniscal injury from the knee and sports section on orthobullets.com. Let's start this episode with a quick summary. Meniscal tears are common sports-related injuries in young athletes and can also present as a degenerative condition in older patients. Diagnosis can be suspected clinically with joint line tenderness and a positive McMurray's test and can be confirmed with MRI studies. Treatment can be non-operative versus operative, that is partial meniscectomy versus repair, depending on the morphology of the meniscus tear, root involvement, patient symptoms, and patient activity demands. Now, let's get into the episode. With respect to epidemiology, the incidence of meniscal injury is very common and is actually the most common indication for knee surgery. As far as risk factors, meniscal injury has a higher risk in ACL-deficient knees. Moving on to etiology, with respect to pathophysiology, medial tears are more common than lateral tears. The exception is in the setting of an acute ACL tear, where lateral tears are more common. Know that degenerative tears in older patients usually occur in the posterior horn of the medial meniscus, and lateral tears are more common in acute ACL tears. Now, let's go over some relevant anatomy. So the meniscus functions to optimize force transmission across the knee. It does this by increasing congruency, as increasing the contact area leads to decreased point loading. It also optimizes force transmission across the knee by shock absorption, as the meniscus is more elastic than articular cartilage and therefore absorbs shock. Finally, note that the meniscus transmits 50% of weight-bearing load in extension and 85% in flexion. In terms of stability, the meniscus deepens the tibial surface and acts as a secondary stabilizer. Specifically, the posterior horn of the medial meniscus is the main secondary stabilizer to anterior translation, while the lateral meniscus is less stabilizing but has 2 times the excursion of the medial meniscus. Also note that the menisci become primary stabilizers in the ACL-deficient knee. In terms of composition, the meniscus is made of fibroelastic cartilage. Specifically, it's an interlacing network of collagen, proteoglycan, glycoproteins, and cellular elements, and is composed of 65 to 75% water. In terms of collagen, the meniscus is 90% type 1 collagen. As far as fibers, it is composed of 2 types of fibers which allow the meniscus to expand under compressive forces and increase the contact area of the joint. These fibers can be radial or longitudinal, otherwise known as circumferential, and these longitudinal or circumferential fibers help dissipate hoop stresses, and know that vertical mattress sutures captures longitudinal or circumferential tears. Now, let's talk about the anatomy of the meniscus. The gross shape of the medial meniscus is C-shaped with a triangular cross-section. It has an average width of 9 to 10 millimeters and an average thickness of 3 to 5 millimeters. The lateral meniscus is more circular. The horns are closer together and approximate the ACL. The lateral meniscus covers a larger portion of the articular surface. The average width is 10 to 12 millimeters, and the average thickness is 4 to 5 millimeters. Moving on to the attachment of the meniscus, the transverse or intermeniscal ligament connects the medial and lateral meniscus anteriorly. The coronary ligaments connects the meniscus peripherally, and know that the medial meniscus has less mobility with more rigid peripheral fixation than the lateral meniscus. Finally, the meniscofemoral ligament connects the meniscus into the substance of the PCL. This originates from the posterior horn of the lateral meniscus and has 2 components, the Humphrey ligament, which is anterior, and the ligament of Risberg, which is posterior. Remember that H in Humphrey comes before the W in Risberg in the alphabet. Therefore, remember that Humphrey is anterior and Risberg is posterior. In terms of blood supply to the meniscus, the middle genicular artery supplies the posterior horns. The medial inferior genicular artery supplies the peripheral 20 to 30% of the medial meniscus. And the lateral inferior genicular artery supplies the peripheral 10 to 25% of the lateral meniscus. And the central 75% receives nutrition through diffusion. Finally, in terms of innervation, the peripheral 2/3 of the meniscus is innervated by type 1 and type 2 nerve endings, while the posterior horns have the highest concentration of mechanoreceptors. Now, let's talk about the classification of meniscal injury, which is a descriptive classification, and is divided into location, position, size, and pattern. In terms of location, meniscal injuries can be in the red zone, that is the outer third, which is vascularized, the red-white zone, which is the middle third, and the white zone, which is the inner third, that is avascular. In terms of position, meniscal injuries can be anterior, middle, posterior third, or the root. In terms of pattern, meniscal tears can be vertical slash longitudinal, which are common especially with ACL tears, and know that you will repair these when peripheral. A bucket handle tear is a vertical tear which may displace into the notch. An oblique slash flap slash parrot beak tear may cause mechanical locking symptoms. A horizontal tear is more common in the older population and may be associated with meniscal cysts. And finally, root tears are functionally equivalent to a total meniscectomy. Know that lateral root tears are associated with ACL tears, and medial root tears are associated with chondral injuries. Moving on to presentation of meniscal injuries, symptoms can include pain localizing to the medial or lateral side, mechanical symptoms which can be locking and clicking, especially with squatting, and delayed or intermittent swelling. On physical exam, joint line tenderness is the most sensitive physical examination finding. You may also find effusion on exam. Provocative tests include the Apley compression test, which is a prone flexion compression test, the Thessaly test, which is done standing at 20 degrees of knee flexion on the affected limb, and the patient twists with knee external and internal rotation, with a positive test being discomfort or clicking. And finally, McMurray's test is when you flex the knee and place a hand on the medial side of the knee, and then externally rotate the leg and bring the knee into extension. A palpable pop slash click plus pain is a positive test and can correlate with a medial meniscus tear. Moving on to imaging, radiographs should be normal in young patients with an acute meniscal injury. However, know that meniscal calcifications may be seen in crystalline arthropathy, for example CPPD crystals in pseudogout, which is also referred to as chondrocalcinosis. Moving on to MRI, this is the most sensitive diagnostic test but also has a high false positive rate. As far as findings, an MRI grade 3 signal is indicative of a tear. This is a linear high signal that extends to either the superior or inferior surface of the meniscus. A parameniscal cyst indicates the presence of a meniscal tear. A bucket handle meniscal tear is indicated by a quote double PCL sign or a quote double anterior horn sign. The differential diagnosis for a meniscal injury includes an MCL sprain, plica syndrome, and osteochondral lesions. An MCL sprain is characterized with pain with valgus stress at 30 degrees of knee flexion, which isolates the superficial MCL. And you may also find gapping of the medial joint line. Plica syndrome is pain that is typically in the medial parapatellar region and may have a palpable medial parapatellar cord. And finally, osteochondral lesions may present very similarly to meniscal injuries, but is differentiated with imaging, specifically MRI. Now let's talk about the treatment for meniscal injury, which can be non-operative or operative. Non-operative management includes rest, NSAIDs, and rehabilitation, which is indicated as the first line of treatment for degenerative tears. Outcomes include improvement in knee function following physical therapy. This is quote-unquote non-inferior when compared to arthroscopic partial meniscectomy. Operative options include partial meniscectomy, meniscal repair, meniscal transplantation, and total meniscectomy. So a partial meniscectomy is indicated for tears not amenable to repair, for example, complex, degenerative, and/or radial tear patterns. It's also indicated in the setting of repair failure greater than 2 times. As far as outcomes, there's greater than 80% satisfactory function at minimum follow-up after a partial meniscectomy. 50% have Fairbanks radiographic changes, that is, osteophytes, flattening, and/or joint space narrowing. Predictors of success after partial meniscectomy include age less than 40 years old, normal alignment, minimal or no arthritis, and a single tear. Moving on to meniscal repair, the best candidate for repair is a tear with the following characteristics: peripheral in the red-red zone, that is the vascularized region, a lower rim width, which correlates with the ability of a meniscal repair to heal. Remember that the rim width is the distance from the tear to the peripheral meniscocapsular junction, which has a better blood supply. Another indication for meniscal repair is a vertical and longitudinal tear, rather than a radial, horizontal, or degenerative tear. Specific vertical and longitudinal tears that are amenable to meniscal repair is a bucket handle meniscal tear. Other indications for meniscal repair include a meniscal tear that is 1 to 4 centimeters in length, a meniscal root tear, and when an acute meniscal repair is combined with ACL reconstruction. Traditional literature reports higher healing rates with concurrent ACL reconstruction. However, current literature shows no difference in healing for second-generation all-inside repairs with or without concomitant ACL reconstruction. In terms of outcomes of meniscal repair, 70 to 95% are successful. The highest success after meniscal repair is when this is done with concomitant ACL reconstruction, as 90% are successful. Modest results are seen when a meniscal repair is done with an intact ACL with 60% success, and poor results are seen with meniscal repair with an untreated ACL deficiency, as only 30% are successful. Moving on to meniscal transplantation, indications are controversial. however, can be indicated in young patients with a near total meniscectomy, especially lateral. Contraindications include inflammatory arthritis, instability, marked obesity, grade 3 and 4 chondral changes, malalignment if not concurrently addressed, and diffuse arthritis. In terms of outcomes, meniscal transplantation requires 8 to 12 months for the graft to fully heal. The return to sports is by 6 to 9 months, and 10-year follow-up showed persistent improvement in subjective pain and function scores, and most had radiographic progression of degenerative changes. Know that re-tears or extrusion are common. Total meniscectomy is of historical interest only. As far as outcomes, 20% have significant arthritic lesions and 70% have radiographic changes 3 years after surgery. 100% have arthrosis at 20 years, and the severity of degenerative changes is proportional to the percent of the meniscus that was removed. Now let's talk about some of these management techniques in a bit more detail. As far as rests, NSAIDs, and rehabilitation, the technique will be partial weight bearing and range of motion as tolerated. Moving on to a partial meniscectomy, the approach is the standard arthroscopic approach. The technique involves minimizing resection, as degenerative joint disease is proportional to the amount removed, and remember, do not use thermal heat probes as part of the resection. Postoperatively, after a partial meniscectomy, patients should engage in early active range of motion, and keep in mind that prolonged immobilization, defined as 10 weeks or more, is detrimental to healing in a dog model. Moving on to meniscal repair, the approach can be an inside-out approach, an all-inside technique, an outside-in repair, or an open repair. An inside-out technique is considered the gold standard. This is done through the medial approach to the capsule. First, you will expose the capsule by incising the sartorius fascia, retract the pes tendon / semimembranosus posteriorly, and then develop a plane between the medial gastrocnemius and capsule. The lateral approach to the capsule is to develop a plane between the IT band and the biceps tendon. Then you will retract the lateral head of the gastrocnemius posteriorly. An all-inside technique is done with suture devices with plastic or bioabsorbable anchors. This is the most common technique. It allows tensioning of the construct and allows many complications like device breakage and iatrogenic chondral injury. Outside-in repair is useful for anterior horn tears. And finally, an open repair is uncommon except in trauma and or knee dislocations. As far as the technique for meniscal repair, vertical mattress sutures are strongest because they capture circumferential fibers. Healing is enhanced by rasping, and know that knee flexion beyond 90 degrees should be avoided postoperatively. Risks include the saphenous nerve and vein when using the medial approach, the peroneal nerve when using the lateral approach, and in general, the popliteal vessels. Finally, let's talk about meniscal transplantation. As far as the technique, bone-to-bone healing is achieved with plugs at each horn or a bridge between the horns. You will use peripheral vertical mattress sutures, and know that correct sizing of the allograft is essential. This is commonly based on radiographs, where within 5 to 10% error is tolerated. Remember that oversizing leads to meniscal extrusion, and undersizing results in poor congruity and increased load transmission. Now, let's end this review session talking about some complications after meniscal injury. And the ones to know include saphenous neuropathy, which is seen in 7% of cases, arthrofibrosis, which is seen in 6% of cases, sterile effusion, which is seen in 2% of cases, peroneal neuropathy, which is seen in 1% of cases, superficial infection, which is seen in 1% of cases, and deep infection, which is also seen in 1% of cases. Okay, so now that we've gone over the major points about this topic, let's go over a few questions to apply the information and get a sense of how this topic has been tested on past exams. The first question reads, a 26-year-old elite female swimmer underwent a left medial meniscal allograft transplantation. She returns to clinic 3 years later with knee pain. What is the most likely cause for late presenting knee pain in this patient population? And the choices are 1, late immune rejection of the meniscal graft, 2, loss of graft fixation, 3, osteoarthritis, 4, graft tear due to acellularity, and 5, late onset graft infection. The correct answer to this question is 4, graft tear due to acellularity. The most common long-term complication after meniscal transplantation is meniscal graft tear. Graft failure that results from graft tears is thought to be related to the acellularity of graft tissue. Meniscal allograft transplantation is considered a salvage treatment option for young patients that is less than 50 years old with symptomatic meniscal deficiencies. The overall complication rate ranges from 4 to 36%, which include meniscal tearing, acute immune rejection, superficial and deep infection, chronic knee pain, etc. Graft tears make up greater than 50% of these complications. Rath et al. Evaluated 18 of 23 patients who had underwent meniscal allograft transplantation. They showed that 8 of 22 allograft menisci, or 36%, tore during the 8-year study period. They believe the decreased biologic activity of the graft over time may be a major factor that contributes to the high frequency of graft re-tearing. Sakaya et al. Reviewed meniscal allograft transplantation. They concluded that meniscal allograft transplantation may partially restore native meniscal function. Data has also shown that the progression of degenerative arthritic changes in transplanted meniscus-deficient knee compartments is slowed with this procedure. To quickly go over the incorrect answers, answer 1, late immune rejection of the meniscal graft has not been documented in the literature. Graft rejection occurs most commonly in the acute phase at an incidence of less than 1%. Answer 2, graft incorporation into the surrounding tissue occurs 8 to 12 weeks after surgery. Loss of fixation would most commonly occur acutely at an incidence of approximately 1 to 2%. Answer 3, meniscal transplantation has been shown to be protective against the progression of osteoarthritis in the knee. And finally, answer 5, chronic infections from cadaveric graft tissue are extremely rare at an incidence of less than 1%. And moving on to the final question, splitting between iliotibial band and biceps tendon, then retracting the gastrocnemius posteriorly, provides exposure for which of the following procedures? And the choices are 1, 2-incision ACL reconstruction, 2, tibial inlay PCL reconstruction, 3, peroneal nerve exploration, 4, inside-out medial meniscus repair, and 5, inside-out lateral meniscus repair. The correct answer to this question is 5, inside-out lateral meniscus repair. The posterior lateral capsular exposure needed to protect the neurovascular structures and allow suturing for an inside-out lateral meniscal repair is performed by developing the interval between the iliotibial band and biceps tendon. The lateral gastrocnemius is then retracted posteriorly and medially, where it helps protect the neurovascular structures. Splitting below the biceps tendon puts the peroneal nerve at risk. According to Terman and Diduck, the gold standard remains inside-out vertical mattress suture repairs. They stated that all inside repairs are best reserved for special circumstances, such as in the setting of concurrent ACL reconstruction. To quickly go over the incorrect responses, answer 1, a 2-incision ACL reconstruction is incorrect, as the capsular exposure is not needed for a 2-incision ACL. Answer 2, a tibial inlay PCL reconstruction is incorrect, as an open inlay PCL is usually performed from a direct posterior approach or posterior medially. Answer 3, peroneal nerve exploration is incorrect, as the peroneal nerve can be explored by dissecting below the biceps. And answer 4, an inside-out medial meniscus repair is incorrect, as the medial meniscus is approached from the medial side. That's all for this review about meniscal injury. Hopefully that was helpful. This is the OrthoBullets podcast, a daily audio review session by OrthoBullets, the free learning and collaboration community for orthopedic surgery education. Keep in mind that these podcasts are designed to go along with the topics on orthobullets.com, and in fact, you can listen to these episodes right on the OrthoBullets website or mobile app while going through the topic. If you've gotten any value from the OrthoBullets podcast so far, please consider leaving us a 5-star rating and writing us a review on Apple Podcasts. It will help us spread the word and increase our discoverability tremendously. Thanks so much, and we'll see you all tomorrow.